Drive time on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Zurich. New year, seize the moment. Talk to a financial broker today about a Zurich pension.
You're welcome back to the programme. When the Taoiseach Micheál Martin was unveiling the Mother and Baby Homes Commission of Investigation report, he said, "One hard truth in all of this is that all of society was complicit in it. We're going to need to confront and come to terms with this as a people." Opposition politicians criticised this statement, though, as circling the wagons and pointed out that Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael leaders were in power during the time frame. Well, this is the question we've all been asking since we read the report or parts of it yesterday. Were we all to blame as a society for the mother and baby homes? I'm joined now by Dr. Laura Kelly, originally from Galway. She's a senior lecturer in the history of medicine at the University of Strathclyde. And Dr. Kelly, you're very welcome to the programme. The Taoiseach, as I say, said we're all, as a society, we were complicit in this. As an expert in mid-20th century Ireland, do you agree?
Hi, Cormac, and thanks for having me on. Well, I would strongly disagree with this statement. I feel that the Taoiseach's apology and the Commission's report seems to suggest that fathers and families were largely responsible. And really, this minimises the responsibility of the church and state, which, in my view, should be held accountable, as it was them that provided the legal and physical structures for this to happen. So, for instance, the report states that in 1967, 97% of illegitimate children were given up for adoption. But if there were no support structures in place for unmarried mothers and the church continued to emphasise that unmarried motherhood was wrong, then what option did people really have? Mm-hmm. So really, I feel that it was church teachings and state laws that perpetuated the idea that unmarried motherhood was wrong and really created this hostile climate.
But I suppose the follow-up question there is, and I know it's so difficult to use today's morals or standards or ethics or whatever terms you use to judge the period of the time of this report, especially back in the 40s, 50s and 60s. But the question arises is, yeah, you can blame the church and the state, but where were societal movements then to break away from the norms of the time?
Yeah, that's a really good point. But again, when you look at institutions such as the church, which holds so much power at the time, it was very difficult for people to rally against that.
Can I ask you, Laura, because you mentioned what options did people have, and there's been a lot of discussion over the last couple of or the last day or so about whether people were forced into the mother and baby homes and forced to give up their children for adoption, or whether they had no other option, and the distinction between those two things, and whether there is indeed any distinction between those two things. What options were available to you in mid-20th century Ireland if you were pregnant and unmarried?
Yeah, so there was significant stigma towards unmarried motherhood and sex outside marriage in Ireland for much of the 20th century. And you really see this culture of fear around sex that was perpetuated by the church, which really emphasised the sinfulness of sex. You've also got a real lack of knowledge around pregnancy and rape, and that comes through in the report as well. And really, that was the state's responsibility to provide that sex education. So for a woman who found herself pregnant outside of marriage, there were really limited options. You could either marry the father, and you see a lot of shotgun weddings throughout the 20th century. Some women emigrated to Britain to have the baby in secret and give it up for adoption there. In some cases, the woman would have the child raised by another family member. But for the majority of women, really going to a mother and baby home was the only option available to them.
Yeah, and I suppose maybe we might hear a clip to bring home the reality of mother and baby homes. We've read a lot about it over the last 24 hours, but let's take a listen to what it was like. This is Sister Hildegard from the Shanross Abbey in Tipperary speaking on RTE in 1986.
Shanross is a large period house in lovely rolling countryside. The girls came from all over Ireland and used assumed names while they were there, so no one knew their true identity unless they chose to confide in someone. Shanross was largely self-sufficient, and many girls who came from farming backgrounds were quite happy to work on the farm. Others worked in the kitchen or in the nursery, and there could be up to 140 girls there at any time. In the evenings, they made their own amusement. They had music classes, some drama, and an effort was made to soften their rejection by society in general. All the same, Shanross had a very hard image in the outside world. Sister Hildegard came to Shanross in 1935, and she has spent most of her life looking after unmarried mothers and their babies.
Well, we knew that. We knew that, really, because it's a very funny thing. We had a priest here who was deeply interested in them, deeply, deeply interested in them, and did an awful lot towards the American adoption, went out to America and this for the... I often thought he would have made a wonderful doctor, but he was in a house in Ross Gray where his people had two quite big shops there. He was in the house, and he heard the lady in the house saying to the maid, she said, wash that cup well because he has had his meals out in Shanross. Now, it was that bad. So we knew well.
She was implying that he would be carrying...
Well, he'd be carrying anything. I mean, that was the... That was the... that was the image. It was... you were despised. They disliked us just as much as they disliked the girls.
Laura, you might comment on that clip there for us, and also the narrative, juxtaposed with the narrative that put forward by the church, that the mother and baby homes were in some sense a refuge for these women and girls.
Yeah, I mean, listening to that clip, you would think that Shanross was this lovely place. But again, I mean, it comes back to shifting the blame onto families rather than the structures imposed by the church and state. And I mean, if you look at the oral history testimonies of survivors in the commission's report, which I feel have not really been taken seriously enough as evidence, they really show experiences of emotional abuse, being forced to give up their children, and then subsequently, years later, many women experienced trauma in gaining actual access to their records. You also see infant mortality rates were higher for illegitimate children in Ireland and children being subject to vaccine trials without consent. Mm-hmm. So these homes were not refuges by any definition of the word, in my view.
Yeah. The very negative attitudes to single mothers existed for a very long time. Can I play you another clip and you might comment on it? Here's the Fine Gael TD Alice Glenn in 1985.
Almost 8% of all births here in the third quarter of last year were to unmarried mothers. This statistic is just one of many released by the Department of Health. The figures also show that over half of the unmarried mothers here are under 20 years of age. Alice Glenn, greater support for unmarried pregnant girls. Would you go along with that call?
Well, I think we should remember that at the moment, the amount of support that has been given by the state to unmarried mothers is causing concern in certain areas for families where husbands are unemployed, where they are comparing notes with each other. Under the Constitution, you see, our Constitution has pledged to protect the family. I don't think we should ever have a situation where they would be getting more than the legitimate family.
What do you make of that, Laura?
Yeah, so that's a really interesting clip for two reasons. Well, first of all, she brings up the issue of the 1937 Constitution, and that really defined women's role in Irish society as subsidiary to the institution of the family. And you've also got a series of laws in the 20s and 30s around censorship, restrictions on dancehall, and the 1935 Criminal Law Amendment Act, which banned contraception. But from that clip, she's kind of giving the impression that things were better for mothers, and that also comes through in the Commission's report that from 1973, with the introduction of the Unmarried Mothers Allowance, that things were better. But I'd really strongly disagree with this as well. I mean, I think there was still a huge stigma that remained attached to unmarried motherhood post-73. The allowance was only £11 to £12 during the 70s, which was pitiful and meant that unless you were very well off, you would not have been able to keep your baby. So really, keeping your child was not a possibility for most women in the 70s and 80s, and these attitudes are just very problematic.
Mm. One of the homes that has received a lot of attention over the last 24 hours is Bessborough, because of the very high rate of infant deaths, particularly in one year where 75% of the babies born there died. We have an interview here from 1999 with June Golding, who is a social worker who worked in Bessborough in the 1950s, and she gave her view of the place.
Over 40 years ago, when June Goulden was working as a newly qualified nurse in a home for unmarried mothers and their babies, she made a promise to Molly, one of the young mothers, that one day she would write a book lifting the lid on the harsh treatment the girls received at the hands of those who ran the home.
Good morning, Karen.
Now, one of the things you say in the book about the way the home, this home for unmarried mothers and their babies, struck you, and you say it several times, was that it was more like a prison than a home. Now, we're talking about the 1950s, but why did it strike you as being more like a prison than a home?
Well, all the girls were admitted there, and they were incarcerated for 3 years. They had to stay and they had to keep their babies and work on the land. It was a big estate, a big farm, and they had to work very hard. And there wasn't any way they could get out until the 3 years was up, and then their babies were taken and put into foster homes or put into orphanages. Some of them were adopted by Americans.
The place you were working was the Bessborough Hospital. Where exactly is that in Cork?
And that is, I think, Colin McCulley, if I'm not mistaken, speaking to June Goulding, a social worker who worked in Bessborough in the 1950s. A quick reaction to that clip, Laura.
Yeah, so, I mean, I think you could link this into the wider history of institutionalisation in Ireland. You know, you see this with mental illness and disability as well, that people who are seen as inconvenient in society were simply put away in these institutions. So I think there's a lot of truth in what she's saying here. And, I mean, I think that comes through in a lot of the survivors' testimonies as well in the report. And again, I think there's problems with this report in the kind of lack of trust and belief in some of the evidence that's been given in the report by the survivors. For instance, the report states that there's no evidence that pain relief wasn't given to mothers during childbirth. But if you look at the testimonies, there's several of them that go against this idea.
Okay, well, look, we'll leave it there. Dr. Laura Kelly, Senior Lecturer in the History of Medicine at the University of Strathclyde, thank you very much indeed for joining us and giving your expert analysis this evening.